views, opinions, and positions expressed on this radio program are those of the speakers, authors, or other contributors, and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions held by BBS Radio Network or its affiliates. This broadcast is intended for entertainment purposes only.
Conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like this. We want to live by each other.
When one is able to repeatedly step into the purity and heart and space of genuine and heightened awareness, miracles manifest. Conscious evolution becomes inevitable, and the revelations to one's spirit becomes revolutionary within the simplicity of its own essence. Awakening then becomes of its aware the destination of such a path when one has answered to the calling, unfolds to reveal the ripening of one's universal truths. The book of positive light, remembrance of the heart.
And now, here is your host for Quantum Mindfulness Radio, Joel Ayala Ayupanya.
Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you so dearly for joining me here tonight on Quantum Mindfulness Radio, as the heightened energies of this quantum think tank of sorts has been intended and aimed at focusing upon our inner and most positive of light towards the potentialities of limitlessness and possibility. It then can potentially elicit one's consciousness to awaken and thrive. And yes, I am your host of this sacred and most concentrated of spaces, Joel Ayala Ayupanya, author of my new book, The Book of Positive Light, Remembrance of the Heart. Quantum Mindfulness Radio broadcasts every other Monday, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on the BBS Radio Network. And so the topic of main focus for tonight's show will lie upon embracing upon the very bridge to the golden age, from one world or paradigm to the next in evolution. And we will converse upon the many dimensions of which we as a species must approach in manner philosophically, authentically, spiritually, holistically, unified in manner in order to transition on over to the other side of this bridge, the rainbow bridge, to a newer paradigm of Elysium, as the dignified rainbow warriors that we are in spirit. And along with me to converse about the significance of this rainbow bridge is a wonderful and beautiful soul, Brent Nathaniel Hunter. Now, Brent is by trade, first and foremost, an information technology specialist and executive, well-versed within the field, with an impressive educational background in math and in the computer sciences of things from Clarkson University. Brent has also received his information systems degree as a graduate of General Electric's Information Systems Management degree program. And stemming from this highly decorated education alone, Brent has dedicated more than three decades of his expertise to systems design and development, analog and digital hardware design, manufacturing, and marketing. Additionally, Brent had further adventured into his graduate work at Villanova University, where he had acquired his master's degree in counseling and in human relations, where he is now an experienced psychotherapist, a clinical counselor, and a personal catalyst to change. He is also an author of many books, with the first being Pieces of Our Puzzle, which provides a holistic synthesis of the world's major schools of psychology, and with his second and third books, Nuggets of Wisdom and More Nuggets of Wisdom, and then with his most recent and most inspiring of work, The Rainbow Bridge, Bridge to Inner Peace and World Peace. And so, dear listeners, I present to you for the very first time on Quantum Mindfulness Radio, Brent Nathaniel Hunter. Welcome, dear Brent. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Joel, for that warm welcome. It's great to be here with you today.
Now, Brent, when I usually meet people of whom are extremely well-versed within the world of computer science and information systems, it is extremely rare to see and know that the very same person is also involved intensely within the world of the health sciences. Now, what has compelled for you and inspired you to further building up upon your education, to striving forth to becoming a psychotherapist, a clinical counselor, and perhaps even being a personal catalyst to change?
Well, I think at the root of it all, Joel, is just the desire to see change in the world. The world that we live in is filled with all sorts of amazing miracles and wonderful things happening. Unfortunately, at the same exact time, it's also filled with lots of suffering around the world, lots of terrible conditions for huge numbers of people. And so it just feels important for me to be spending my time here while I'm here, somehow making a difference. And so, you know, the field of information technology gives me the ability to afford things in my life and to pay my bills and also to do things that I want to do, you know, off hours and on the weekends, like write books, like the Rainbow Bridge. So it's, you know, it's basically a desire to help share the information that I've been given, because I don't feel that it's my information. I feel like the information and wisdom that's been given to me, I feel like I have a responsibility to share it with others.
And yes, there are many components that every individual, every human being is exposed to. And by just being the interconnection between those different worlds of our part of our ourselves, for that matter, is pretty much an important thing when it comes to not only working on ourselves for change, but also in helping the change and providing the interconnection for the rest of the world. And we're going to be talking about that as far as bridge building and business building, for that matter, for which you are very well versed upon. Going back to you historically and your particular upbringing, and I understand as well that the very dynamics of your family from within your own upbringing derived from its multidimensional foundation in spirituality is pretty much a significant portion of what has contributed to the person that you are today. Could you tell us that story about yourself as far as your spiritual, philosophical upbringing, which has made you the person that you are today as far as providing for the rest of the world?
Absolutely. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. My mother was born and raised in Turkey, and so she was 100% Muslim, and my father is Jewish, and so I'm part Jewish and part Muslim, but we were raised actually as Christians. And so that was pretty confusing growing up, and as if that wasn't confusing enough, my father was also very interested in Buddhism and in meditation. And so I've been exposed to different religious traditions and cultural traditions for, you know, ever since I was a young child. And so, you know, at the time when I was really young, it felt like a curse almost, because, you know, I couldn't really make heads or tails of what it all meant, really. But over time, I've been able to really delve into each of the major world's wisdom traditions and to find out that there really is a common ground, and that all of these traditions, you know, can be utilized to help bring about our own inner peace and tranquility and to bring about world peace. And so when we look at and identify and eliminate the common ground that's present in each one of them, then we have something very powerful, and that's why I call this common ground the universal principle. So that's kind of a little bit of background, you know, starting when I was a child. And the other thing that I'd like to mention that's pretty interesting, I think, is that my father was also, as I mentioned, he was really interested in meditation, but he was really interested in meditation. He was doing transcendental meditation for a number of years, and was so interested in it and felt so strongly about it that he brought me and my two sisters to learn how to do TM, and at the time I was 12 years old. And so I've been meditating ever since I was 12, and you know, in one form of meditation or another. So that's a little bit of background that, you know, I think you could probably see that coming from that kind of background really did cause me to think a lot about what is religion and spirituality all about? What does it all mean? You know, and I'm happy to say that I've been given various experiences in life to make some sense of it all, and to most importantly share that wisdom with others.
Right, and just interestingly enough, from your exposure to Christianity and Buddhism, and amongst the other spiritualities, wouldn't you say? Do you feel as well that the different spiritualities from different cultures? Do you feel that they're just the different storytelling, the interpretations of the same source of wisdom that comes from a higher source, of which resonates from a source that is beyond words and beyond from what we can basically interpret from just the mere words in itself? Do you feel that they're just the interpretations of one source?
I do. I believe that you know, we can talk about it in different ways. You can say that each religion kind of has its own stories, or it has its own, you know, interpretation, that the interpretation it may sound a little bit different, but at the heart of it all, it really is the same. It's very, very common, you know, there is this common ground that's heart-centered, and, you know, I think about religion sometimes in terms of, like, eating food. Like, if you like to have Chinese food, I mean, food gives you nourishment, right? So if you like to have Chinese food, that's great. So go out and get some Chinese food. If you don't like Chinese food, you know, it doesn't make any sense to curse it or to you know, think badly about Chinese food. You know, if you don't like it, then just go and get some Italian food or some Mexican food or whatever, some other kind of food. And I think that religions and spiritual belief systems are very much the same way. Whatever feels good for us, whatever, you know, we resonate with, we, you know, we should take it in and absorb it and make good use of it. And if we hear about a religion, for example, or some spiritual system that we don't agree with or don't resonate with or don't like very much compared to likes, you know, to our other likes, then, you know, there's no need to disparage those other religions. Just, you know, just gravitate towards the things that we do like. But what's really exciting to me about the Rainbow Bridge and the universal principles is that I think perhaps for the first time ever, we now actually have a language, the language of universal principles. We have a language that we can use to talk about the same thing. And we don't have to become divided. By talking about different spiritual systems, we can talk about the underpinning principles in each of these different traditions, and we can refer to them as universal principles, and they're all the same. So, you know, the fact that we have a common language and a common understanding, I think, is very exciting, because, you know, the world that we live in has a huge number of challenges and at the same time a huge number of opportunities. Right. And I think that universal principles help us navigate through this period of time.
And so just on the same parallel, wouldn't you say too as well that the differing books from the major spiritualities, wouldn't you say as well, and wouldn't it be fair to say as well that these books from within itself are different books, but within the same volume of the same theme of the same story, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, I think it's similar to, you know, each major wisdom tradition has its own, you know, way of describing things, its own interpretation, and each one has its own book or books. And so, yeah, from that perspective, yeah, it's different ways of saying the same thing. You know, we can use math as an example. You can say, you know, 3 + 1 = 4. The answer is 4. Well, 2 + 2 = 4. And, you know, 5 - 1 = 4. And so you could say all those things are different ways of saying the same thing, which is 4. And so it doesn't mean that 2 + 2 is better than 3 + 1, you know. And so that's kind of how I look at religious traditions and each of the books that go along with each of those different traditions as well.
And Brent, that was such a wonderful way of expressing and responding to that question. For the most part, definitely a great metaphor in describing that. And I never would have even came up with that unless I was from an IT background. But thank you for that, for sure.
Sure.
And speaking of books within itself, your book, The Rainbow Bridge, is very powerful. Not only from the sense from the very content matter of this book, but also from the extensive amount of support and favor that you have received from your endorsements. And there are several endorsements that can be seen from the very front portion of your book, authors to philosophers, world leaders from within their field. What endorsement, or even perhaps what groundbreaking support that have you received for this book, The Rainbow Bridge, that had literally launched the very progress of this book to where it has essentially broken barriers, reached its threshold, and later reaching its critical mass?
Well, that's a great question, Joel. I think first it probably makes sense for me to share with your listeners the fact that this book that we're talking about, the one that you have, is the fourth edition, which was published this year. The very first edition was published in 2001. That was 13 years ago. And so this has been a labor of love for me for many years, and I come out with new editions every few years that continue to expand upon the core of the universal principles. And so, as I've went along, I've been getting different endorsements from different people, and I think probably the one that raises the most, I don't want to say eyebrows, but that raises the most interest is, His Holiness the Dalai Lama has endorsed the Rainbow Bridge. And so when I say that to people, usually their eyes get all widened and say, I should read this book now. But each of the other endorsers are amazing in and of themselves, and the way I look at it is that for each person that endorses the book, they come from a community of people. And so, for example, there are a few New York Times best-selling authors that have endorsed it, and so they represent the New York Times best-selling author community, if you will. And of course, they're authors, so they represent the author community. There's a couple astronauts, actually, that have recently endorsed it. Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon, has provided a very beautiful endorsement, and Namira Saleem, another astronaut, has endorsed it, And so I think each one is very beautiful. Each person comes from a different perspective, in the value that they see in the Rainbow Bridge. And so I can't really point to any one in particular, other to say, of course, I'm very, very humbled to say that the book has been endorsed by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. I'm very pleased and humbled about that, for sure.
Absolutely. That is such an honor to be encouraged and well-recognized by, especially so, the Dalai Lama. And as it relates to your experiences, I know the Dalai Lama is well-versed in the meditative process. Have you conversed at all with the Dalai Lama as far as any comparisons and parallel with information that you have received in your own meditative practice and conversation with the Dalai Lama himself?
Well, I haven't had any direct conversations with His Holiness the Dalai Lama about meditation, but I will say that I just adore him, and one of the reasons why is because he's completely filled with love and compassion, and everything he says and everything he does demonstrates a completely all-inclusive nature of love and compassion. And so that's what we're aiming at here with the Rainbow Bridge, is to create a completely inclusive, totally global bridge that we can all, climb onto together and walk across together into the future. And so The Dalai Lama certainly represents that very, very strongly.
Going back to the meditative process, as far as your practice, now everything that you've have been exposed to, not only with the spiritual nature of things, but as far as your experiences within business and then your therapy work as well, and in between those particular worlds that you currently live in your meditative process, what has compelled you to journey upon this mission and essentially such a dramatic fashion, and in being a part of the ushering in of this this new and golden age of existence that is prominent. It's a prominent ideology that exists amongst people who are in the know and of those who are not of the know, subconsciously. What can you basically retrieve from the actual meditative process in your own practice?
Well, I was about to say that I thought you were asking what led towards the creation of the Rainbow Bridge. Is that what you're asking? Okay.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Let me share something about that question, and then I'll get into the meditative practices if I can. So, the Rainbow Bridge actually came about as a result of running a complex internet business. It was a .com. Back in 1994, I ran it until about 2001, and it was the first intentionally global online community in the world. We had, it was a multi-million-dollar operation. We had many investors. We had 160 volunteers around the world. We had about 700,000 members around the world as well, and it was an extremely challenging number of years to run that business. We were kind of caught up in the whole dot-com craze. That was a period of time when investors were just looking everywhere to try to figure out how they could become, gazillionaires. And we didn't really get the financing that we needed to build a viable business, so we had to shut down in 2001. But it was extremely challenging, and it was filled with many, many different, many, many different challenges and many sleepless nights. And I was doing a lot of meditating during the time, and I was also doing a lot of journaling and taking of notes and, dipping into various spiritual texts as well. And so I was taking all these notes to try to figure out how to get myself through those rough times. And one day, towards the end, when I knew that I needed to shut down the operation, which was called the Park Online Community, I was sitting there meditating, and I had all these notes in front of me, and it just occurred to me that all of these notes that got me through all those rough times were really, really important, and they represented universal wisdom that actually cut across all of the different wisdom traditions. And so in that moment, I recognized the importance of all of that material that I had pulled together. And so, because of that incredibly challenging time while running a business, the Rainbow Bridge came about because of that. And so now, in terms of meditating, there's many different meditative practices, I'm sure, as you know. There's, thousands of different ways of meditating. I started, as I mentioned earlier, with Transcendental Meditation, TM, and I've since branched out into many other types of meditations. There are visualization meditations, there are mantra meditations, there are physical sensation meditations, like being aware of your breath or being aware of your heartbeat. And so it really just depends on what it is that's going on in my life and why I'm meditating. There are different reasons for meditating. Sometimes I meditate to just, feel that sense of peace and harmony and tranquility within ourselves. But then there's other ways of meditating that are kind of more action-oriented that are designed to help manifest things in your life. That's also a kind of meditation. So there's a whole variety of different practices that I've combined and integrated together to produce my own unique way of meditating, and I've given a few different examples of meditative practices in this edition of the Rainbow Bridge.
And that's the, I believe, the key word with your specific work. It's integrating and providing yourself as being the bridge, the intermediary between philosophies to spiritualities, many different fields of a profession, such as computer systems to counseling and therapy. So essentially, I believe, and this is what we will be speaking of and conversing about on the second segment of the show, and conversing about how we can integrate things together in a global fashion towards peace and towards an integrative fashion from many aspects of the human experience, from not only the spiritual and the philosophical sense, the human experience of things, but also within the business nature of things as well. And we will be conversing about that on the second segment of the show. Now, Brent, with only 3 minutes remaining within the first segment of this broadcast, please provide for our listeners any contact information on how we can gain access to your websites, your future work, and how we can purchase a copy of your new book, the fourth edition, The Rainbow Bridge, The Bridge to Inner Peace and to World Peace.
Sure, so the best way, Joel, for people to get in contact with me and to learn about The Rainbow Bridge is to go to the Rainbow Bridge website, which is therainbowbridge.org. It's just therainbowbridge.org. And from there, there are links to purchase a copy of the book on Amazon. There's a spiral-bound edition, there's a hardcover, softcover edition, a Kindle edition, and a Nook edition as well. So my contact information is also on the website.
Wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And I thank you again for joining me here tonight. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I have with me tonight Brent Nathaniel Hunter, a visionary, a catalyst for needed change from, or actually for with this world, a rainbow warrior himself of peace, and the author of his new and inspiring book, The Rainbow Bridge, Bridge to Inner Peace and to World Peace, on Quantum Mindfulness Radio.
My name is N.A. Carano, experimental philosopher and systems consultant. You're listening to Quantum Mindfulness Radio, live on PBS. Check me out at www.avatarparadigms.com. for your latest Metanoetic hookup. Definitely. If it's not mainstream, then you're on BBS.
Hello, my name is Dr. Advige, author of my new book, You're Not Crazy, Your Awakening, and you are listening to Quantum Mindfulness Radio on the BBS Radio Network. And remember, if it's not on mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hi, this is Tina Saki, best-selling author of My Spirit is Not Religious, A Guide to Living Your Authentic Life. I help people self-heal by guiding them to release limiting beliefs and patterns, so that you can live spiritually open and authentically. And you are listening to Quantum Mindfulness Radio, hosted by Joel Ayapanya. Namaste.
Hello, everyone. This is Diane Collins, and I am the creator of the Quantum Think System of Thinking and the author of Do You Quantum Think? New Thinking That Will Rock Your World. And you are listening to the Quantum Mindfulness Radio Show with host Joel Ayapanya on BBS Radio. To find out more about me and my work in Quantum Think, please go to www.DianeCollins.com. That's Diane with two N's and Collins with two L's, .com.
In a world where what we hear, see, and feel is elusively believed to be truth, comes an inspiring book that chronicles the journey of one's courage in seeking to find clarity from that of a different, more profound, more resounding, and inviting truth. A truth from within. Introducing the Book of Positive Light, Remembrance of the Heart. Discover the memoir and journal of author Joel Ayala Ayapanya, as he invites readers to explore the effortless powers within and the inner makings of their own hearts as they are guided by the very pages of this book. As a template to further exploring themselves from within to the point of restless self-rediscovery, Author Douglas Ross Hamilton writes, "The Book of Positive Light is a journeyman's guide to grasping the import of acquiring the inner light." The Son of God. Get your copy today at most major online bookstores, including Amazon.com. The Mother of Jesus takes you on a journey. Remembrance of the Heart. Personal journey about her perspective of raising the Son of God. At HollywoodBookTrailers.com. Along with events that were never told until now. Listen, as Mary pours her heart out about the amazing task and responsibility of raising Jesus, the Savior of the world, and the trouble, pain, and near-death experiences it cost her and her family, feel the passion, the joy, and the sorrow as she describes her relationship with Joseph, her friends, and even her enemies, surrounding the task of presenting Jesus to the world. Mary's Diary, a fictional masterpiece, is a multi-part audiobook series that will take you on a wide range of emotions for hours. Purchase Part 1, an hour-long, musically scored audiobook for only $1.99, or through other major book retailers like Amazon. All available here at HollywoodBookTrailers.com.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, I welcome you back to Quantum Mindfulness Radio. And again, I have with me tonight a visionary, a motivation, and the inspirational author of his new book, The Rainbow Bridge, Bridge to Inner Peace and to World Peace. And so please, dear Brent, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Joel.
Now, Brent, out of all of the universal principles, or from perhaps these universal truths, is there one from the 60 that seems to be the most important to you, that seems to be the very glue that ties them all together? Or do they seem to work together like a system, hand in hand?
That's a really good question, Joel. They really do all work hand in hand, and it depends on what's happening in our life. Like if we're, let's just say, I don't know, we're in a job, we love it, we're getting recognized, we're being promoted, we're being paid as much as we want to be paid, I mean, we're on top of the world. Well, the application of universal principles in your life at that particular moment in your journey would be different than, and you know, the universal principles that you might find valuable at that time would be different than if you're having all sorts of incredible challenges going on. So it really depends on what's happening in our lives at the time. But I will say that there are two that are kind of really special. And one is, of course, the Golden Rule. The Golden Rule, I think pretty much everybody's heard about them, the Golden Rule. And what's interesting is many of us have heard the Golden Rule as expressed as do unto others as you would want them to do unto you. That's one way of saying it. I think there's actually a better way of saying the same thing, which is even more powerful, and that is, do not do to others as you would not want done to yourself. That is a really, really
perfectly
powerful,
said.
Universal principle, right. And I think that it, to the extent that we would follow this principle all around the world would certainly be a better place. So that's one universal principle that's very, very important. Another one is really, really profound, and that is that life is a dream, that we're living inside a dream. We're living inside an illusion, and it's an illusion because it's not exactly what we think it is. We go about, many times we go about our daily lives and we think things are just the way they kind of appear, but there's a whole other reality, actually a whole other multiple levels of reality that are going on all at the same time. And, you know, when people talk about being awakened or enlightened, you know, when the Buddha was asked, "Are you enlightened?" He said, "No, I am awake."
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, it's waking from the dream of life. It's waking from what we think is real and breaking through these various illusions. So that's another really profound universal principle that is not really possible to say, oh, I want to understand that. You know, I want to read everything about that. Well, you can sort of start to understand it, but it's revealed to you in the perfect time. And as all of these universal principles are kind of revealed, and the inner secrets of them are kind of revealed over time based on who you are, depending on what experiences you're having, and depending on your past and your outlook towards the future, all of those kinds of things. So it's very complex, but if we follow the universal principles, I think that that we can achieve an amazing sense of inner peace and tranquility within ourselves, and certainly we can create a better world.
And just conversing back about the whole process of meditation, that has contributed greatly to your awakening process, as opposed to merely just the enlightenment of things just from the play of words. So yes, definitely for sure, that is a component of the learning process within the earthly plane, where it contributes to the whole ideology and experiential nature of paradoxes. Could you be able to converse some more about the nature of paradox in itself, just from our conversation within our break?
Sure. So Joel, the whole, first of all, what is a paradox? A paradox is something that that appears to be mutually exclusive, or it appears to be not understandable, or it appears to be impossible, and so I think that our lives are completely filled with paradox all the time. Life, on the one hand, is extremely complicated. It's just extremely complex. But on the other hand, we can also say, you know what, life is actually really, really simple. We can make it complicated, but we can also allow it to be simple. And that's one example. But paradoxes are things that I think kind of reveal themselves, and things that we might have thought were a certain way can turn out to be in a different way once we start pondering and meditating on things. And so, so I think paradox is the fact that life is filled with paradoxes, and at the same time it can seem really incredibly complicated. Life really is very simple. It's not necessarily easy, but life is actually very, very simple. And to the extent that we can use meditative practices to go within, we can go into the space of oneness within ourselves and into the space of peace and harmony and tranquility. And it's by the way I like to say it is using our mind to go beyond our mind. And I think this is really what everybody wants. Everybody wants to be happy. I mean, everybody wants to be at peace and to have a sense of joy and happiness inside themselves. And it's very exciting, because these universal principles, when you ponder upon them and you meditate upon them and how they apply in your life, you know, they can really make a huge, huge difference in our lives as individuals and collectively as a society.
And when we basically come across the nature of synchronicity as well, wouldn't you say that brings us across another evolution of things as far as consciousness and awareness?
Yes, synchronicity is one of those really fascinating things. It's the recognition that things are not actually random. You know, when we talk about, you know, something that happened by coincidence, mathematics teaches us that there are many things that we see happening that absolutely cannot possibly be by coincidence. I mean, just mathematically speaking, certain things happen, and as unusual and rare as they might be, we can actually figure out that it's not random. And so synchronicity, you know, these are synchronicities, noticing things in our lives that happen that are connected in some way. You know, when you think of somebody and suddenly they call you on the phone, you know, there's many, many different examples. And synchronicity is really, really exciting, because the moment that we kind of tap into and become aware of synchronicities in our life, they're very exciting, first of all, and so we can become excited by the existence of synchronicities. And if we allow ourselves to appreciate synchronicity, then synchronicity actually happens even more. Or maybe it doesn't happen more, but we become aware of it happening. We become conscious of these synchronicities even more than we were before. So in that way, as we become more and more and more aware of synchronicities, you know, our consciousness is expanding. It's one of the things that's happening, and we're evolving. And I think as we evolve, then we become even more excited and even more in tune to synchronicities. And as that happens, you know, it just keeps going on and on and on. It keeps feeding itself, and you know, in this really amazing kind of upward spiral where we're becoming aware of not only synchronicities and paradoxes, but all sorts of other things that are happening in our lives and in the lives of other people and other beings. And that kind of goes back to the whole concept of awakening, is that there's many different layers of awakening. But as we focus on synchronicity, yeah, I think it kind of feeds on itself and just gets amplified more and more and more.
I believe synchronicity and paradoxes from within itself interplays with each other rather closely. And just reflecting back on paradox within itself, I believe so that there's a more of a consciousness awakening of seeing with clarity behind the illusion of things, the veils per se, that there are certain playmakers who are contributing to that illusion of things, that the cloudiness of that nature of in preventing us from seeing clearly, and then with the withholding of consciousness. But then in the whole experience of paradoxes, we believe that, okay, it's them against us. But in actuality, if we are to learn the interplay with the paradox of things, with that in itself between them and us, and then we start to solve that riddle and breaking that secretive code, that it is not about them and us, it's about all of us together. And so by observing the so-called the enemy of things, or the people who are contributing to the illusion of things, we by transmutating and transforming our intentions, our belief systems, our perceptions and observations about those particular people, and portraying more love to them, more kindness, more acceptance and forgiveness, that in itself will change that whole reality from going from the illusion and to bringing back everybody in humanity back into oneness, wouldn't you say?
I absolutely would say that, and I think that's a very wise acknowledgement. You know, in terms of resolving issues and problems, whatever they might be, if they're in our own, you know, family, for example, or relationships, or you know, relationships at home, relationships at work, people in different places, and certainly when we're talking about the world, and you know, who's responsible for creating this problem and that problem. You know, it doesn't really help at all by pointing fingers elsewhere and saying, well, they're the cause of this or that, because really, at the end of the day, this may not be apparent to many people, but we are all one. Everything else is an illusion. We are completely one being with one. We're one spirit with one mind. We have different physical manifestations. And that's part of the illusion. But to the extent that we can think and you know, become more accepting and more inclusive in our thoughts, like for example, saying that we have a problem in this country, and you know, those people over there need to do something different. Well, it's far better to say, no, we need to do something different. We are them, and they are us. We're in this together. And so to the extent that we can, you know, modify our thinking, you know, it'll have a direct impact not only on us individually in our lives in a sort of a smaller scale, but also certainly on a global scale or, you know, community scale when we're trying to resolve issues.
And in order for us to anticipate world peace, And this is basically a concept and a topic worthy of discussion, stemming from our break, that in order to promote world peace, we have to reflect an inner peace about ourselves, and in promoting our higher selves to the level of authenticity and legitimacy of our own selves. And if we are to, you know, throw the first stone as to any particular judgments that we possess towards the world and the global landscape of things, so we have to reflect upon our inner peace as well. And it's a fairly pretty much in the philosophical, spiritual, and scientific sense, stemming from that, from within itself, the mirror effect of things, and then how we see things with our eyes and feel things with our hearts must be portrayed the same way in how we feel towards ourselves, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. You know, everything begins within. When we talk about, you know, because the Rainbow Bridge, we do have a, you know, half of the book talks about world peace. But what's really important, any conversation about world peace or making the world a better place is totally incomplete unless we start with inner peace. And every single individual can look within and ask themselves fundamental questions, such as, you know, who am I and why am I here? What do I believe? What do I not believe? It's really, really important for every single one of us to start at that place where we're focusing within ourselves. And for almost like as step number one, kind of forgetting about the world in a way, to focus on ourselves so that we can, you know, achieve a sense of inner peace and tranquility within our own heart and mind, because it's from the place of peace that ideas can spring forward. And it's from the place of inner peace and harmony and joy that all sorts of magic can be born from.
The
whole idea of inner peace and world peace, that it's so important that every single one of us make it almost kind of like a responsibility that we take and say, you know, I'm going to make it a priority for me this year or next year to focus on myself, to try to understand certain things about myself, to try to achieve this sense of inner calm within myself. And then, you know, when large numbers of people do that, the world automatically becomes a better place. Even when one person does that, the world becomes a better place. And, you know, and I just want to say,
yes,
just to kind of take that one step further, is the reason why the world becomes a better place is because if we are calmer in our own heart and mind and soul, and we have a conversation with somebody else, whether they're our family member or they're somebody at a store that we're shopping at, or you know, anyone, I mean, we're going to have a better interaction with those other people. It's going to be a more peaceful interaction. It's going to be a nicer, kinder interaction. And so, you know, and then that person is going to, in turn, have a slightly better day. And, you know, when you talk about minuscule little differences like that, and when you're adding them up, hundreds of people, like the ripple effect, hundreds of people, thousands of people, millions of people, suddenly you recognize that every single one of us really does make a difference. And, you know, the whole idea of focusing within suddenly becomes something that's not only doable, but very exciting.
It was a conversation I've had with many friends, but even more so from the conversation that I've had with Steven Spooner from, I believe it was earlier this year, in May or June, around that time period. And it reflects upon the 100th monkey effect, as far as when you change from within yourself, your particular environment, your landscape, the universe from all around you seems to change, because it has no other choice to do so because of the that change that you have made for yourself. And it becomes a domino effect and a wave type of pattern that seems to come across the landscape in a much more exponential form. And this basically transitions into this next topic. And I know we're running out of time pretty soon here. On page one, I believe it's on page 197 of the Rainbow Bridge of your book, in which you emphasize and the influential and head-turning quote by Buckminster Fuller, and as I quote, "You never change things by fighting its existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the old model obsolete." Now, you have essentially broken it down briefly as to what it required from our conversation from the break. And from your own eyes, what is required in order to make this manifest into reality of things? And I know you have made mention of a particular concept, a system of which we talked over just recently, about this global operating system. What can you say about that, the philosophically and the many other aspects of the business-minded nature of things?
Yes, Joel. First of all, thank you for reading the quote by Buckminster Fuller. I mean, that's a really, really powerful and very profound quote, because when you're talking about the world today, when we think about, like, what are we going to do? How are we going to, continue to just live like this? You know, nations fighting each other, just, you know, whatever the most powerful one wins. I mean, are we going to continue to live like that, or are we going to, are we going to find a better way? Well, the concept that, you know, you don't change things by fighting the existing reality, you change it by building a new model. That is really, really powerful, and I think extremely appropriate and timely, because the times that we're living in right now call for a completely new way of thinking about the world. And let me give you this one example that you just asked me about, and that's the global operating system. The world today does not have a smoothly functioning global operating system. Now, what is a global operating system that I'm referring to? Because I'm an IT person, I think about things in system terms and logical, kind of rational ways. And so we have computers, whether they're PCs or Macintoshes or Linux machines or mainframes or whatever they are, mobile devices, they all have operating systems. And so on a device is a global operating system. And the purpose of the operating system is to ensure the equitable distribution of resources. And so if you think about like a PC or a Macintosh, you know, it's the operating system that allows for the equitable equitable distribution of resources so that multiple programs can be running simultaneously, like Word and PowerPoint and Excel and some web browser or whatever it happens to be. And so if we did not have a smoothly functioning global operating system on a computer, then any program could come along and basically start sucking up all the resources of the computer, start using up the CPU power, the memory, the hard drive capacity, the peripherals. But it's the operating system that allows for the resources of the computer to be shared so that multiple programs can kind of coexist peacefully, if you will. And so this metaphor, this example, this analogy is really, really powerful for the time that we live in, because we're living in a completely interconnected world. We're completely interconnected. We're totally interdependent on one another. what happens, you know, financially and economically and politically on one side of the world really does make a difference on the other side of the world, and even more so. It's moving more and more and more in that direction. And so we live in a completely interconnected world, and we're completely reliant upon each other and interdependent, and yet we do not have a smoothly functioning global operating system. And because we don't have a smoothly functioning global operating system, any program, so to speak, can come along and start sucking up resources, such as petroleum, natural resources of all kinds, minerals, water, whatever it happens to be. And so when we recognize, whoa, we don't have an operating system for the world, then it's kind of exciting because then the problems that we have, we recognize, of course we're going to have these problems. Of course we're going to have war and violence and poverty and just terrible living conditions because we don't have a smoothly functioning global operating system. When we develop a smoothly functioning global operating system for the planet, then that operating system is going to ensure the equitable distribution of resources, just like a computer does. So I'm not saying that we have all the answers on exactly what we need to do to build this operating system, but it's, one thing is very clear, and that is we don't have a smoothly functioning global operating system, and we need one. So in that spirit, part of what we talked about in the Rainbow Bridge is this operating system concept, such an important concept. And then there's a whole variety of things that we can do in the world to make the world a better place, to create, literally, to create a bridge to the future, to create a bridge to a better world. We have a 14-point roadmap to world peace. And in this roadmap to world peace, we don't have all the answers, but we have a roadmap. And with a roadmap, we can come together and figure things out. And when we have a common vision, and that is a vision of a peaceful, sustainable future, we can put our hearts and minds together, and we can create a better world. There is absolutely no reason why we can't do this. We can send probes to the far corners of the universe, or maybe not even the far corner. We can send, you know, what was it? We just recently landed a probe on a comet that was traveling, what was it, about 30,000 miles an hour. And that was about 300 million miles away. I mean, it's astonishing what we can do when we put our heads together to figure things out. And so that is, I think, a fundamental task of our times, is for us to come together to literally create this bridge to a better world.
And that's the magical word there, bringing things together, interconnection, bringing worlds together. And this global operating system, this rainbow bridge of sorts, as it relates to your book, is a heart-centered type of approach that will essentially do that. And essentially, we are basically running out of time, and I would love to invite you to another show, which we will be focusing more on heart-centered-based type of businesses. But now, as a completing thought or a concluding message for our listeners, in addition to that, what would you desire to send to them in spirit? What is your concluding message for inspiration for our listeners tonight?
Well, I think what I'd like to share as a final message is that we do not need to be living in the kind of terrible conditions that most of us are living in the world. Excuse me. You know, here in the U.S., we have lots of amazing things happening, and we're kind of living in a bubble. But the vast majority of people in the world are not living under very good conditions. We have everything we need to make a better world, and each person makes a difference, starting within. Starting within our own heart and mind and soul, to achieve a sense of inner peace and calm within ourselves, and we have a roadmap to world peace that can take us there with very specific, concrete steps that we can take to help bring us closer. And that's the major message I'd like to share.
Thank you, Brett. Thank you for your final concluding message. And your words of inspiration have just resonated from within me. And blessings, dear friend. Bless you, dear Brent. Blessings in all that you do.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed. And I have with me a visionary. Oh, yes. Thank you so much. A peaceful evolutionary in the changing of paradigms, and the author of his new, simple, but groundbreaking book, The Rainbow Bridge to Inner Peace and to World Peace. And so I thank you, dear Brett, for joining me here tonight.
Thank you so much.
And I thank you, dear listeners, for being here tonight to enjoy this wonderful moment between me and Brent on this sacred space of things, this quantum think tank of sorts on Quantum Mindfulness Radio.
You got to look. to what's the least, for a king shall be crowned and him fit conquer the beast. Now look who was crowned in a 1930, to sit upon David's throne, his majesty. Come fi rule this world, it's theocracy. I and I see, it is no mystery. Man him a day in Ethiopian country. Police slavery, the head of the Nayap in the order. Comfy fight for dumpers, people the earth, rightful ruler. Collective security, cause him are the conqueror. Now nuclear weapon, progressive is I emperor. Me say so, I'm the father of a new race. Revealing us, Zion as his dwelling place. Around his throne, a nation bent on their knees. Me love your father, when me sing and up, me say, why you die? In a 1930, to sit upon David's throne, his majesty. Come fi rule this world, it's theocracy. I and I see, it is no mystery. Man him a day in Ethiopian country.
He
if you had missed this show or any other previous broadcasts, please visit us at Quantum Mindfulness Radio's official website at www.quantummindfulnessradio.com. Again, that is www.quantummindfulnessradio.com. All previous and prior broadcasts are archived at the BBS Radio Network. Please join us every other Monday, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on the BBS Radio Network. Again, I thank you once more for joining me here tonight on Quantum Mindfulness Radio.